can go beyond the realm of any movie into the future of live entertainment, where every adventure you've seen on the screen happens to you. This is no ordinary theme park. It's a real working motion picture and television studio, and you're a star. Come to the only place on Earth where everything that happens in the movies happens to you. Live the movies at Universal Studios Florida. No one makes believe like we do.
Welcome, dreamers of all ages, to another episode of Unbuilt, an unrealized theme park podcast. With me today, as always, is my co-host Ryan Dorman, who's very much looking forward to Walt Disney on stage singing the old songs that we all know and love, as I'm sure Disney is cooking up at the moment. But anything else you would like Walt to do?
Is that confirmed?
It's not confirmed.
I'm reading this right now. I was like, I haven't even seen that published in any websites. So I feel like you're
It's still an alleged rumor, but it's very, very noticeable how they're putting in a turntable and everything like that. Like, to give you all background, about 2 weeks ago, I received the tip. Some people received the tip that they're installing a Walt Disney animatronic to be alongside Mr. Lincoln, and that there would be a turntable. And sure enough, just a few days ago, they confirmed that there's permit to install a new turntable in Mr. Lincoln. Today, Disneyland officials said that Mr. Lincoln is staying and that there will be more updates in the future about this renovation. And I would have to say that nearly confirms it, doesn't it?
I'd say that at least confirms. I mean, if the rumor was a two-part rumor and one part is right, then I would, go as far to say that the second part is probably also right. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to have him singing songs, will they?
No.
That'd be quite disappointing.
Yeah, just, he's going to sing Blood on the Saddle.
No, he'll just start. Oh, Jesus. Start by, presumably, if I had to guess, it would just start by him introducing the Lincoln animatronic as he did in that one video. And then the turntable happens. And then Lincoln does his expression. I wonder if this will affect how the show runs, out of curiosity. If it'll be less like a American history show and more of a Disney history show. Like,
well, that's
Lincoln,
what I was
like, a first animatronic.
Yeah. So the current show, the way it works is that there is this little prop that has a screen on it, and the screen comes down and essentially does kind of like this truncated version of the Civil War portion of the American Adventure. And then it translates into Lincoln's life, and then it goes up and we see the Lincoln animatronic. My guess, if I had to guess, is that they will do that part, but it might be like more of a tribute to the attraction itself rather than Lincoln, and have Walt talk about Lincoln himself as the robot. That's my guess.
That's my thought too, is that it'll be like, well, Walt Disney pioneered animatronics. I assume it could go one of two ways. I think the safer way, presumably, would be that they pull audio from the Walt Disney introducing the Lincoln animatronic from like archive footage.
Right,
the weaker way would be the AI Walt Disney synthesis voice that they've been testing around in a variety of areas. I think that would be,
I think it's going to be a combination of both. Yeah, it's going to be a combination of both. That's what I think. They're going to use archival audio, but they're going to change some things with AI, and it's be like, well, you can hardly notice. This isn't so me at all.
The Lincoln animatronic is like famously really solid. However, Disney's latest real human animatronics have been not great.
I would have to say if you're going to make an animatronic of Walt Disney, that's something you really can't fuck up. It's an animatronic of your founder. That's something that if people shared all over online, it looks like shit. That's not good. I would have to say that this has gone through multiple rounds. It ain't going to be the president animatronics.
I was going to say, like, it would have to be a step above the president animatronic. Mm-hmm. I think that it'll be interesting that this may drive a lot of foot traffic to Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln or whatever.
Yeah. I think that's the idea. Be. Like, my friend says he goes in there all the time. It did when it was playing. It closed last month. And that, like, there would be maybe like 3 or 4 people in there.
Dead empty. I remember when I would visit Disneyland and I would go in, I would drag whoever I was with in there. Mm-hmm. And it would be, of course, the usher and then like 3 or 4 people maximum spread out across this massive, relatively massive theater for audience.
Like, well, that's, you're right. But the thing is that it's actually a pretty small theater compared to the ones at Disney World.
What is it, like 4, 5, 6, 7 rows of seats or something like that? Still, definitely not too
like bad. I think it's like a 400 or 500 seat theater or something like that.
Right.
Like,
I mean, this would definitely be a way to bring people to the attraction. I think you're playing with fire, making a Walt Disney animatronic, but as long as he doesn't do the tap dance, I think it should be. We should give him a cigarette too. So she just
oh my gosh!
Like the first animatronic to blow air and puff a cigarette. That's the big technological and progress here.
They're gonna have him have a cigarette in his hand, but he puts it out.
That's right. Yeah. On stage. Yeah.
That's what they're gonna do. So it's like, we're both adhering to history, but it's also a lesson to children: don't smoke. He'll be like, "This will give you cancer," and then he winks. You know.
What do you think the vibe from the Ben Shapiro Disney Twitter people are gonna be, like, the hard Disney purist?
Oh, they're gonna be. That's the thing. Like, it doesn't matter like what either I. A side of the like political aisle they're front on, they're gonna think this is like the worst thing to ever occur in the history of anything. It's like the sacrilege, you know.
Yeah, I feel weird about a real person, especially a real person who is long dead and the company is almost basically only related to a name at this point. Like, I wouldn't say that the current Disney and the old Disney are at all the same.
I think it's a little much. There was a Disney exhibit that opened up for the 100th anniversary of Disney where Walt would appear on a screen. It was kind of like this like AI touched up Walt that was appearing on a screen. And that felt a little better because that was more of a video image. So it feels a little less gross. And I would prefer that to just make it a, like a living, breathing robot, you know, quote, end quote, living, breathable. It feels like a step too far of trying to bring this man back from the dead. That's what it kind of feels like. It's very odd. I'm not going to be up in arms about it. Like, there are 1,000 worse things that the Disney company could do, and this keeps a very historical attraction still in place, so I'm fine with that. It's mostly the discourse that I'm terrified of, and it hasn't really gotten to be so bad because I think it's just kind of like this whisper chatter right now, and it's not, nobody's made an article about this, basically. Nobody of authority has come out and said it. It really hasn't been validated in that way. When that happens, you're going to see the discourse start, and it's not going to be pretty discourse. It's going to be mudslinging, I would have to say.
The obvious problem, right, is that the original attraction, this predicting the discourse, the original attraction was built, and the original kind of premise was because Walt Disney was so into United States history, and Lincoln was like this major figure, and the attraction was educational, quote unquote, or at the very least it retained some educational value.
It helped like different things. Like, he wanted to build this human animatronic try this technology. He loves Lincoln. The World Fair is looking for, you know, options and pavilions, and Illinois offers to sponsor it. A bunch of confluences of events, but you are correct. There's a lot of historical baggage that goes into it.
And the attraction now takes that kind of historical baggage and completely eliminates it from the attraction, or from the experience.
Mm-hmm.
Now being about Walt Disney almost as this cartoon character, you know, this mascot for the company in a way. So that's a very cynical way of looking at it, which is right. What I do best. So I think that... I do think that like that'll be the main talking point from a lot of people is like, well, this used to be an attraction, like an actual attraction with like an actual intention. And now I kind of doubt that the attraction is going to be the same. Like I would highly imagine that the Lincoln speech will be preserved, but a lot of it will be about, you know, some kind of Disney history more than about American history,
yeah.
Which like I've sat through Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln. And I think all things considered, it's relatively interesting, but like you're saying, it's spark notes of a different ride. It's spark notes of a very different experience. Mm-hmm. So, but I, if you had to predict like where things are going to go, it'll be that way.
Right. And that's the thing. I mean, it's been 15 years since the last update, which was 2009. Which was a fantastic update, but it really does need it. I guess this is what they need to do to get more people in there. I also guarantee you that it will be shorter run times to ensure that people stay in there, because I don't know what the runtime is, but it's got to be like probably 10 minutes now when this new one opens up. Yeah, because God forbid people stay in their seats. And that's just a simple fact. You know, people don't want to sit for these long shows anymore. I will miss Two Brothers playing at Disneyland. I will miss it. Especially that's where they took those photos, right? it's at Disneyland.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's the Frontierland Station. If you look at that,
that's funny.
That's where some of it was taken. Not Frontierland, the New Orleans Square one. Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
That's where they took the photos in that sequence, but... You know, all things must come to an end, and hey, it could be worse. There was a time. You ever heard about the binaural Lincoln version?
No, I do not. I don't know.
Okay, so you know, Alien Encounter and Sounds Dangerous, all that stuff where you like wore headphones and they were doing 3D audio.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was a version of Lincoln that lasted, oh God, probably like 5 years, where you would go in and you would wear headphones, and the idea is that you're like a Union soldier that is going to meet Mr. Lincoln. You like, I think you get like injured in war and you're being taken to meet the president. He will thank you. So of course, like, it's done to where it's mostly dark and you're wearing the headphones, but like they shine things on stage to kind of like be representative, and they would be like, you're going to the barber and he's gonna do your haircut, you know, snip 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 snip, snip, like kind of like that. And and then you would get, you know, your trim. And that was always like the trick that they would do, was with the haircut. And then, of course, you would meet Mr. Lincoln. Oh, hello, sir. And then you'd see the Lincoln animatronic do his speech. So they did have that version going for 5 years, which was hated. So it could definitely be worse, for sure. Or we had the Steve Martin movie in there for a while too. So yeah,
well, that's the thing. It's like the while some people might complain about it, this is not the original. This has gone through many, 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 many changes. So to say that this is like a sacrilegious thing to make a big change is, I think, a bit protective, overprotective even. It's going to depend on the execution. Like, it's going to depend on what this Walt Disney looks like, if that's what they end up doing, right? If, you know, that's
it's all alleged. Still alleged. Yeah.
Right. But if they do end up doing that, it's going to depend on whether this thing looks like leather over a mechanical skeleton, or whether it seems like it's a big step. And Disney's been taking some rather big swings, some rather big gambles on animatronics stateside recently.
Yeah.
You know, everyone, if the effort is put in, like in Tiana's, then maybe you'll get an incredibly you know, Uncanny Valley fluid Walt Disney figure.
Well, let's very much hope that they are able to resurrect the dead. But we move on from Disney and we go to Universal in our main topic. All right, here we are for our main topic. It is the Universal Cancellation Special. This week, we are following up last year's Disney Cancellation Special with the Universal one. So this one is going to be pretty much a look at a bunch of projects that don't necessarily lend themselves to their full episode. Now, as you know, the Disney one was a bunch of projects that were announced and never happened. So you would think that Universal Cancellation Special would be the same thing, but Universal doesn't play that game. Would it shock you that Universal plays it to where they don't announce things until they're starting to be built?
Frankly, they sometimes announce things after they're being built?
That is true. That is very true.
Universal is famous for, like, everybody knows this open secret of what's currently being built, but there's no public press until very, very, very late in the process.
Right. Because they play it to where we don't want people to plan around these things necessarily. We want people to go now, irregardless of what's coming in the future. The only real exception is Epic Universe, which, I mean, you're building an entire theme park. That's something you can't just go, what are we building? Ooh, what is this? No, they actually have to go, okay, we're building a theme park. Now, you will know what's in it via everybody talking about it for like 4 years, but we'll actually announce the lands not until like a year and a half before it's going to open. Sure. Right. But at least they announce, okay, we're building a theme park. They're like, one of the most notorious examples was when they were building Velocicoaster, like the social media team actually made a game about it going, oh, we're building a churro stand, because marketing was like, you cannot announce what this is, you know, but it's like, we're clearly building a roller coaster. It's like, I don't know, just be cute about it. Okay. Look, like Mr. Universal doesn't want us to say we're building Velocicoaster. So, you know, just think of something. Okay. Okay. So, like that's kind of the vibe that you get from Universal all the time. So let us start with the Bond stunt show. Before we get into it, look at the concept art there. What strikes you about this concept art? Does it remind you of anything?
What do you like Waterworld?
No,
like, it reminds me of Austin Powers.
What is what is the like the art remind you of?
What does that mean? What are you talking about?
I'm surprised you're not getting this. Like, okay, we'll get into it, but you're gonna be like, oh, in just a second. One of the concepts cooked up for Universal Studios Florida while it was in the planning stages was the James Bond stunt show, housed inside a massive indoor arena, not yet, imitating Blofeld Island. Oh, you did realize it?
I couldn't read your mind.
Okay. Ah, okay. So it was housed inside a massive indoor arena imitating Blofeld's Island from You Only Live Twice and parodied on The Simpsons with Hank Scorpio in the episode You Only Move Twice, which our millennial / Gen Z audience may know better.
Ingenious, isn't it, Mr. Bunt?
Scorpio, you're totally mad.
I wouldn't point fingers, you jerk.
Sure, do you expect me to talk?
I don't expect anything from you except to die and be a very cheap funeral. You're gonna die now.
Ralph McQuarrie, the visionary creative design artist behind Star Wars, designed the concept art for the Goddard Group, who would eventually craft the Terminator 2 3D attraction for Universal. So yeah, this is very noticeably Ralph McQuarrie concept art. You can definitely feel the Star Wars in there. And the concept art is very nice. There's a laser going off. There's a giant lagoon and a submarine there. It's a very cool showpiece. And it's all like housed within this dome. It's very awesome. Per Gary Goddard, by the way, it's a bad man. Very bad man. in the illustration, several things have happened by this time, all setting up the grand finale. The grand circular roof has opened. The massive hangar doors have parted, revealing the nuclear warhead missiles, one of which is moving onto the gantry for launching, and the massive submarine has surfaced. In addition, Bond's most memorable villains are gathered via the multiple screens, of course. To watch both his demise and the launch of the nuclear warhead that will put the two superpowers at their mercy. At the time, there were about 15 to 16 Bond films, currently with Timothy Dalton. The series would once again be rebooted with GoldenEye in 1995, setting Bond up for two new revivals with Pierce Brosnan and then Daniel Craig. If the attraction were to be built, it's likely that the very popular Bronson films would necessitate a re-theme of the stunt show. Alas, MGM was already in agreement with Disney and likely complicated their willingness to license the Bond property to Universal. However, to quote the title of one of the films, Never Say Never Again. I don't know if you have watched many Bond films. I've only seen a few.
Me too.
So have you seen any of the the Timothy Dalton ones that were around that time?
I on TV, probably. A variety. Most of my older Bond stuff is just in passing. I've definitely caught it in the Brosnan kind of era. And then, of course, growing up in the Daniel Craig time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That was the action movie of my generation, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah. Not a huge Bond fan?
I like Casino Royale a lot.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I mean, the Sean Connery and the Roger Moore movies are very well regarded. And, you know, I've not seen almost any of them, but they're popular enough to where I could see this being a neat thing for the time. The one thing that strikes me is that this is not about how Bond movies are made. It's a very immersive show, as if you're watching a Bond movie set up on the stage itself.
Right.
And it definitely leans into the lunar aspects of those, you know, Bond films, which Austin Powers would then mock at the same time during the Brosnan revival era. But the question is how would this be able to stand up? Because I think if this were to open in 1990, this would be pretty old hat by, again, the late 90s, when, again, those Austin Powers movies are coming out. Because this is what it's parodying. The Brosnan films are a lot more serious and slick and really do none of this stupid grand villain nonsense. And it's more less tongue-in-cheek and more, you know, it's more subtle, more sleek, more suave. So where does this really go? This seems to have a very short shelf life.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think that presumably they would have just kept updating it, but I don't think anybody at the time predicted how things would change. I don't know how you would update it. You're right, though. Right. It's such a massive show scene that it's you can't really do much to adjust that.
It's not really malleable. It you can't really adjust it to reflect the Brosnan films, which really, you know, climbed out of this, you know, grandiosity and was more about globetrotting and these, you know, slick, you know, car action scenes. And of course, the Daniel Craig ones are pretty much just building upon that and a lot of shaky cam parkour shit. That's what these films turn into. And, you know, it completely doesn't reflect it. So I would think if they built this, it would be closed really quickly, but probably well-regarded, kind of like, and the Goddard Group is building on this because they did at the same time the Adventures of Conan show, based on obviously those movies as well, that starred Arnold Schwarzenegger. And those films and that show are pretty grandiose, but they also had this very 80s shelf life and did not live on. Like, it did go away for instead Beetlejuice's Graveyard Review, which was an easier to update show. It wasn't a stunt show. All you had to do was just pump in some, you know, new hit songs at the time, and that, and have the monsters start dancing. Easy stuff. But when you kind of create this, I don't know if it'll like last, because again, it's almost already dated. Kind of like, not like Terminator 2, which seemed to last more almost because they kept trying with Terminator, and Terminator's aesthetics didn't fully change. And I think that's what they might have gotten right, but eventually they got rid of that too, obviously.
I was thinking the same thing, honestly. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about how, like, and that's a good point. So the Terminator, the iconic T-1000, never changes across all the Terminator movies, even though the Terminator, like, style becomes more typical action movie into the early 2000s and then dog shit into the later years.
Yeah.
The Terminator image is forever. And I think that could potentially stand with Bond. Like, I think the series would have been less the attraction would have been less serious as time went on. It would have went more hokey from like actually being, you know, a example of a typical action movie into more of a artifact of the time. I think Indiana Jones kind of had to go through that a little bit. Now, Indiana Jones was always a big action movie, but I think people look at Indiana Jones very differently now than they did when it first came out.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. James Bond is hokey in a way that very few things are. I think that a similar problem might have happened had somebody done like a original series Star Trek ride, right? It's like just things do not look normal. Everything isn't as you expect it to. And there's also very little iconic in this besides the laser. Let me look at the picture again. Besides the laser shooting at the tank, which would of course be probably turned into a comedy by the Austin Powers time.
Yeah.
Frank, maybe they pivoted to be Austin Powers. You didn't think of that.
That would be insane. They could. It's actually really easy to do. Like, shocking. Yeah,
they would already have. It might be insulting, you know, to anybody who worked on it, who put like just real now, effort into it.
Now, instead, the screens just have Dr. Evil.
Yeah. And there's a dance party.
Yeah. And you just hire a little person to play Mini Me. It's actually pretty easy to do, you know? Why not? It could work. Lots of lowbrow jokes and get a guy in a fat suit to be Fat Bastard. You know, I'm just rolling with the punches here. You are right, though. You can't, with how popular GoldenEye was when it came out, I don't see this lasting easily in vogue because it'll look instantly dated. It's just like you said with like original Star Trek ride, that Star Trek The Experience attraction in Las Vegas was based on Star Trek The New Generation. And even though TNG had already ended, that's what they were going for, because all of the Star Trek shows and films pivoted to the Next Generation and that specific look, because that's kind of the modern focus. It almost reshifted the way people thought about Star Trek. And I think that GoldenEye did that for Bond. I really do.
Because
in with Daniel Craig, it just got more and more serious. And that's a problem you can't get over, that, you know, the way the public sees James Bond is very different once that film hits.
Agreed.
Well,
because it just becomes, James Bond begins to reflect action stylings of the time.
Yeah.
And it becomes less technical fantasy and more hardcore action.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, if it does become Austin Powers, you know, it would be a real shame because, you know, they would go in and they would say, how much is the budget to retheme it? And someone would go, $1 million. And then another person would go, Dr. Evil, it's actually a lot more expensive to do an attraction redo in the 1990s. You know, you might want to change it. So, and then he would go $100 million, you know, and then they would be like, maybe a little less.
Attraction. You know? The attraction is that Dr. Evil wants to retheme the Bond ride.
That's it. Yeah, that's true. And, you know, Austin, I'm not going to do an Austin Powers impression. It's not 1990.
Come on.
No.
we'll behave.
Oh, God.
You just got did a fucking Dr. Evil, and I can't do an Austin Powers.
It's just, oh, wait a tick. I'm not going to do it. Let's move on. Let's move on to something that everybody agrees with, which is Harry Potter. Let's talk about the abandoned Potter virtual reality project. Widely reported by Permit Princess Alicia Stella, one element of Harry Potter that seemed obvious from the outset is a ride where guests embark on a broomstick. The original Forbidden Journey attraction used KUKA arm technology to simulate flying on a flying bench. Okay. Before that concept, guests were going to board the Ford Anguilla that Ron and Harry travel in during the events of Chamber of Secrets. But they stuck with the flying bench well because it's easy. Pretty much. Sorry, it's actually not the flying bench, it's the enchanted bench. And it definitely does have one of the oddest designs for a ride vehicle that you've ever seen. You've ridden Forbidden Journey before.
Yeah, it has so in practice, I think it makes a lot of sense. In premise, though, it's very confusing because you walk up to the Kukla arms that are moving through the board area, and it's just these seats that are moving down the line. Mm-hmm. And you step back for a moment, you're like, what is actually happening here? Because they haven't been enchanted to fly yet. So they're like slowly, you're getting on like a moving bench that is then lifted into the air.
It's literally looks like a bench that would be in an old-timey castle with the wooden panel sides.
Yeah.
A very fancy bench. And it's just such a weird idea. I guess it's supposed to be like a lecture bench of some sort.
Right.
Yeah. It's so odd. Well, in Universal's upcoming park, Epic Universe, one of their original ideas for their Potterland was to present a bifurcated land. Both attractions would take place at the Ministry of Magic, but one would lead you to the French Ministry and the other to the British Ministry. Guests would transport to the British Ministry via the Flu Network as they are entering through France. But for this attraction, guests would simply enter into the French Ministry of Magic. Now, of course, this attraction has been eliminated, and now it's just you're in France and you go to the British Ministry, and there's a ride there that's allegedly going to be called Harry Potter and the Battle for the Ministry. Let's talk about this canceled attraction. Based on a ride developed for a Hong Kong theme park based on the Twilight series by Thinkwell, the idea was to situate guests into a high capacity VR attraction seated on motion based single seater vehicles. So in that one, you can see they're kind of in this like garage, and they're all getting on a bunch of motorbikes, and they're connecting from the ceiling these VR headsets that kind of snap on to these helmets that they're already wearing. And that's kind of like how they make it high capacity. The attraction would hold 2,880 riders per hour in small rooms of 6 broomsticks each, with 6 pre-show rooms where 24 riders would be handed VR headsets. This is already in practice at Mario Kart in Super Nintendo World, where guests are handed AR headsets prior to boarding. And you could see a diagram there of how this kind of would look like.
Quick question. The AR headsets on Super Mario Kart, I thought, are they not just plastic glasses? Do they actually have some kind of a like a computer inside of them? Like how heavy are they? I didn't know.
So what it is it's a simple little Mario hat that you stick right on and you kind of bolt into place. And then there's a visor in the front of it. You get on the vehicle, and on the vehicle itself, there's this plastic glass sheen with like magnetic attachment, and you snap it into place on your visor. And what it does is that the supposedly on the actual ride at the car, there is a like a projection thing that kind of tracks your eye movement and also tracks where your eye, your head is moving back and forth, back and forth. And it tracks that and aligns to that to create the augmented reality. Very so
an incredibly technically advanced ride.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And yet people think it's boring. So,
and yet it's not completely effective. Well,
it just goes to show that technology doesn't carry an attraction.
But it is. I do like the attraction. The AR isn't 100% there yet. We are doing our archive series right now, and I believe coming up will be my trip report to Super Nintendo World. And if you've heard it in the past, you may have remembered that I talked about how things were more transparent than they should be. And not only that, but everything awkwardly ends at the edge of the glass, and it doesn't fully go within your periphery. So things awkwardly kind of end before your eye line gives up. And so it's not completely effective there, but in VR, you don't have that problem. So it's the same thing. The VR screen would attach the headsets, given the time of boarding with the vehicles themselves. It's just similar to Mario Kart. Thanks to VR, guests could control their broomstick and get a personalized experience while listening to the exact same audio and playing in the same general virtual arena as the other six. So you would be a group of six all on these broomsticks flying through, and you could see an avatar of the other person, but you would be enjoying your own personalized adventure going up and down. Obviously, it would kind of be like Millennium Falcon, where you're on rails, you know, you're on rails, but you know, you're still like able to get your own personalized experience because the motion base would be individualized and could move to what you're doing. A backup concept, of course, would have guests riding in a giant screen dome, similar to Forbidden Journey, in case the VR concept didn't work. Universal worked hard on creating an attraction that eliminated motion sickness as much as possible in virtual reality and was keen on the idea. So much so that when Epic Universe was delayed by 2 years, the project was moved over to Universal Studios Florida and transformed into apparently the British Ministry again. The plot of land taken up by the former Fear Factor Live Theater was now to house this attraction, and permits were submitted as the show was announced be permanently closed in 2021. However, at the same exact time, the Harry Potter exhibit in New York announced, well, a VR broomstick attraction. Universal Creative had been working on this for years and was allegedly caught off guard. The attraction also received poor reviews when it opened in 2022. By that time, the project seemed to be scrapped. What was it due to New York? Maybe. But it may have also been due to the fact that the contraction would require over 100 team members to staff the ride for sufficient capacity. Now, that was like, I think it was like minimum 60. The minimum, if I remember correctly, to run when I worked at Universal, to run Transformers the Ride, okay? The minimum, absolute bare staff was less than a dozen. Okay. So just to let you know, that is not good because you had to have like two people in each pre-show room. And then you need to have two people in each of the small six rooms to, you know, take care of the VR. It was a massive undertaking. And really, you couldn't do it unless you didn't want to have a high capacity for this attraction. And I think that's just ultimately what doomed it.
Look, the part of the Harry Potter attraction where you go on the broomsticks, I think is nauseating and like kind of awful. Okay. So, I mean, I think it's just kind of, this is like not really an incredibly objective opinion here. But I think that, you know, my least favorite part of the Forbidden Journey is the dome where you kind of move on the broomsticks. So the alternative idea, I think, is a bad idea. And as we've kind of seen, VR is not that easy. It would be perfect if it was easy to put it into an attraction, but nobody's been able to do it, I think, very effectively, to the point where the technology doesn't shit the bed constantly. You know, the Void might be the only actual thing I've ever seen use VR in a way that was unique, and that even still had some technical hiccups throughout its short lifespan. I'd be curious to know how it would work with VR, and I'm kind of ready for someone to break the mold and like actually throw some VR in an attraction. You correct me if I'm wrong, but the only like major VR installation in like a theme park right now are on the rare times that the roller coasters in a variety of parks.
Six Flags did a bunch of those VR roller coasters, which I did and hated. I hated it. I had to take it off.
Is it just nauseating?
It was so nauseating. Oh, it sucked. It sucked so much. And that's the thing with the Void. Reason why that worked is because you're walking. You're in control of everything. Right. Even on this broomstick that you would be quote unquote controlling, you know, still you're at the mercy of this, you know, motion base, and you're looking in other directions while you're really still not moving on your own volition. And I think that's the trick to making VR work, is you need to be upright. That, or you need to be really seated in a comfortable position. That's kind of like the people ride those VR like motion simulator coaster things. And that was all right as long as the motion isn't too intense. Like I did one at like Dave and Buster's was doing these for a while, where it was you would be on these motion bases and you would put a VR headset on. And that was all right, but the motion wasn't too intense. And they really instruct you, do not like look to your left too hard. Do not look to your right too hard. And you really can't control that. I think if you did that even on this ride, people would be sick in like seconds.
I've had similar experiences. There's like a Rayman Raving Rabbids fucking HTC Vive attraction at Round One, or like a Dave and Buster's, right?
Yeah.
Those are incredibly, the movement is very limited because it's an arcade attraction. And even then, it's really just using an HTC Vive. It's not throwing anything really too insane at you. Mm-hmm. I would worry about a high intensity thrill attraction with glasses. Your equal, what are they called? Equilibrioception is the word of the day, is going to completely capitulate when you can't see your hands, when you can't see your feet.
Well, that was the thing I forgot to mention. They were trying to make it to where they had at least a technology where it would track your hands. And you could see your hands, and they had that at the Void as well. So at least you would be able to see your hands.
Yeah, I remember like if there was any problem with the Void, it's still that the lag on moving your hands in the VR space is enough that you can tell they're not really your hands.
Yeah.
It's interesting stuff. I think that I just worry with this attraction, you're just going to have upchuck. Yeah. And if you get people nauseous enough, especially with this bitch of an attraction to run, where you need like 100 people at the same time,
exactly.
You know, you have all these individual rooms, and then someone vomits on the VR, so now you have to clean everyone out of the room, bring the sanitation crew. I think that like it's a compelling idea, and clearly everybody wants it, because if you can do a VR dark ride slash simulator, that thing is infinitely changeable. It's like Star Tours 2 on steroids, because you could keep changing it. it. You know, if it's anything like Star Tours 2, they never will change it. But it's like Star Tours on steroids.
Hey, it just got new scenes. Wait a second.
It gets all these Disney Plus scenes, but like, you know, who cares? That's not anything. That's advertisement. They might as well like update the attraction and have little, you know, QR codes to buy Disney Plus. That's what they should do. Little QR codes. It's like tap your iPhone to this RFID and automatically with Apple Pay buy 12 months of Disney Plus.
You get a you get a box set of Andor. That's what you're gonna get. Jesus.
Did they release that on Blu-ray?
They did. Yes.
Oh, well, look at that. Mm-hmm. There is a god, right?
Yeah.
But I it's an interesting idea. I personally am just like so taken back by any VR motion sickness thing. And clearly if like the reviews were shit at the Harry New Potter York exhibit, one, yeah. then yeah.
Well,
so I have to imagine like that wasn't that like, so I went to a, I don't know. There was like this VR, not VR, excuse me. There was this Vincent Van Gogh, like immersive. Yes, kind of exhibit
yes. I
thing.
Did the exact same thing that you did. Yeah. Yes.
And the VR at the end, I remember being, it was like an iPhone. It was just cheap VR and like a guided tour thing. So I don't know whether the Harry Potter exhibit was any better.
They didn't do
a
VR at the end of ours. So that's interesting.
Oh, okay. So yeah, it was, they did the opening exhibit and then the immersive experience. And then you could tack on for like a couple extra bucks, wow. a VR like tour of the paintings.
That's interesting. Yeah.
I think it was just like, the more I looked at it, the more I felt like this is just an Unreal Engine, an Unreal Engine tech demo, where you're put in with an HTC Vive and push to go, or like a Meta Quest or whatever the hell they were using, like an Oculus. But I wonder how the what the quality of the Harry Potter exhibit ones was. Like, it may be a VR broomstick attraction, but I can't imagine it would have the fidelity and the detail of something that Universal Creative would have been doing of their theme parks.
You're right, and it's just so funny. It's so funny because as all these things are happening at once, they're recovering from the pandemic, okay? Then Universal delays Epic Universe, and then, like, they plan this out, and at the exact same time, this New York exhibit's like, we're going to do exactly the thing you're thinking of. And they're also experiencing the staffing shortages that come with the pandemic recovery. And they're like, wait a second, we have to build a ride that like as bare minimum needs 60 people to run. And we can't get a full staff on Revenge of the Mummy. What the fuck are we doing here? You could see exactly why they scrapped this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So our next one is The Secret Life of Pets, Norman Lost in New York. And you may be wondering, wait a second, there is a Secret Life of Pets attraction. I wrote it. It's in Hollywood. Okay, well, this one's a little different. The movie came out in 2016, right? Yeah. So in 2015, Universal was really hot on this upcoming Illumination film called Secret Life of Pets. And they thought this movie was going to be like the next big thing and wondered, what if we got ahead of the curve and we built an attraction that opens up a year after the movie happens? And they're like, oh my God, this will be so cool. So they're like, okay, we need to put something in the lower lot to complement the recently opened Transformers attraction. So why don't we do this? Let's build an entire area themed to New York City on the lower lot and put in three new attractions. And the attractions are this. Secret Life of Pets, Norman Lost in New York, a trackless dark ride, a theater show showing a musical review based on Pitch Perfect. And you want to guess what the final attraction is?
Fast and Furious.
Yeah, no, it takes place. takes place in New York.
And it's a Universal film.
And it's not a Universal film. It's an attraction that they were already developing for Universal Studios Florida. Are you ready?
Oh my to hear fucking what god!
It's Race Through New York, starring Jimmy Fallon.
You know, last time I was in Universal, it was that after hours event, and I had I would say 15 easy opportunities to go on that, and I did not take a single one of them. And I think
it has a fantastic queue. Okay, really great queue.
It does.
There's seats. You can plug in your phone and charge your phone and chill in there. But then you have to go on the fucking ride.
Well, I had that realization. Like, I don't think even Jimmy Fallon knows what panda, the hashtag the fucking panda is anymore. Like, it's so dated for something that no one wanted to see anyways.
Mm-hmm.
But
so again, the the anchor of this new little land would be a trackless dark ride called Secret Life of Pets, Norman Lost in New York. Now, who is Norman? Norman is the guinea pig that is constantly traveling from place to place in the apartment complex that Max and Duke live in the final version of the attraction that opened up that uses the same Omnimover ride system that Yoshi's Adventure at Super Nintendo World in Japan and eventually Epic Universe will be using. That also features Norman, but the idea is that he's just popping up into grates. Into this one, he gets lost in New York, and Max and Duke list us as puppies to go and help them find them. So we go on these trackless vehicles that are made out of like trash. I think the idea was it was going to be like trash, and you would go on these vehicles and it would be very much like Pooh's Honey Hunt, to where animatronic versions of Max and Duke were alongside riders in the same ride vehicles going alongside you during the journey. And this whole thing would kind of follow the idea of the film. In the show notes, you kind of see a blueprint, a leaked blueprint of the attraction. There's actually an animatic that you can watch out there. Just kind of type in Secret Life Pets, Norman Lost in New York animatic, and you'll find it. And it'll take you through the attraction. And it follows some of the same beats as the eventual off the leash attraction that did get built. But pretty much it goes through a lot of the first film and a lot of the places that you go to. You do go to the cat alley, and you also encounter that hawk that I believe was voiced by Albert Brooks in the in the film. And it would all end in you finding Norman and going into a sausage factory where there would be the song from Greece, let's be together, whatever that song is. I think it's in the movie as well. So you would exit through that sausage factory, and then you would go into a gift shop, and then there would also be a restaurant based on the films as well next door. And so this was going to be kind of the variation of this attraction, and they were very high on it. This was going to also be built in two different places in Universal Studios Florida. It was going to be built either in the Shrek theater area, which is currently VillainCon, or they were also thinking of building it where the Toon Lagoon Amphitheater is. They were really high on this ride. So the film comes out in 2016, and it's a smash hit, like super huge hit, makes over $300 million, one of the biggest films of summer 2016. So what happens? Well, pretty much there was a lot of disagreements within Universal itself. They wanted to budget, and they were like sizing up for a bunch of big projects, including Nintendo. So this was starting to become not a priority. And then somebody had the idea, and this is going to be very funny to you, of instead, what if we attached VR helmets onto everyone and have this be a VR ride, and people go through blank warehouses on these ride vehicles, and the entire ride is in VR? Really bad, like really bad. Everybody hated it, and the attraction got beefed, like squashed for the time being, until Universal Studios Hollywood Creative separates from Florida. So they bifurcate, and the Hollywood team now goes, okay, well, what do we have? We have this Norman Lost in New York. What if we retooled it and take the cheapest ride system that we've already patented, and which is that Yoshi Omnimover ride, and we fit it into this spot where the Globe Theater is and retool it? And that's how we got Secret Life of Pets off the leash. But for a time being, it was going to be this attraction. What are your thoughts and feelings on this?
I feel like I need to watch the movie Secret Life of Pets.
You've never
I feel
seen
like
it?
I haven't seen it. No, and I didn't think too much of it. I've seen bits and pieces.
All right. So this is the plot of Secret Life of Pets. And let me see if you can guess what it's ripping off.
So far, I have not been able to guess any of the things that you...
No, you'll be able to guess. If you can't guess this, You're a fucking idiot. No offense. Okay, so there's a dog named Max. He has an owner, and he's very attached to the owner. And wouldn't you know it, the owner picks up a new dog, and he feels threatened by the new dog. And because he's jealous, he tries to make the new dog get lost. But, oh no, they end up both getting lost in the tussle. Now they have to find their way back home to their owner and have to learn to get along. Gee, what does that remind you of?
Sounds a lot like Bug's Life.
Yeah,
exactly. I'm surprised they didn't hear more about that, but I also don't think it's a particularly like... It's an Illumination movie. Mm-hmm. If anybody was going to do, by the way, a black box VR attraction, it would be Illumination. I think that's like the fact that Universal hasn't positioned Illumination Land or whatever Universal Studios to have some like black box Illumination simulator attraction that they can just pivot out for every single Illumination release, attraction.
One could guess that VillainCon was going to be that.
Jesus. VillainCon stuck. Did I tell you about when I was on VillainCon?
Yes, you did. That you had to pee. Yeah.
Yeah, so bad. Yeah. Anyways.
That, like, I don't know. I think it would be cool to have a trackless ride, especially at Universal Studios Hollywood. This was the space that this was in is now occupied by Super Nintendo World, by the way. But I am very glad that we didn't get Jimmy Fallon. Thank the Lord every day for that. And someday, hopefully, his stain will be gone from Florida as well. I mean, you really don't have to like really know that much about Secret Life of Pets to be kind of enamored with the idea of this, because it does sound really cool. I like the idea of there are animatronics that follow you around on these trackless ride vehicles. That is cool.
Yeah, no, I do like that. It keeps its sense of like groundedness. Like you don't feel that in other attractions, like Mickey and Minnie's, for example, is just a good case of like there are repeat characters, but you know that they're not the same repeat characters, right?
Right.
It's like there's just multiple figures. So this is a little bit better.
I assume you don't have much else to say on this attraction.
I mean, if I have to put about as much effort as Illumination put into the movie, which is like, it's a cute little idea. And I mean, the rest of the New York stuff sounds like a bit of a mess, but it's cute. I'm very interested by I can't think of another time where that's been done. And if it's ever been done to success of like predicting the success of a film and then building what maybe would have done would be try to build a multi-million dollar attraction just to like nail.
Yeah. You know, like nail that launch. That much. Like Michael Eisner tried these kind of things, but on a lesser scale, like
overlays
or overlays or shows.
Yeah. Shows. Exactly.
Parades.
It's very different to like commit that much real estate and be like, we are banking on this movie doing incredibly, incredibly well.
Yeah. I remember when like the rumors started flying around, it was like, no. Like they've been working on this for the beginning of 2015, like a year and a half since, before the movie would come out. They really wanted this for like 2017, but it just never happened. This could be good. Have you seen the off the leash attraction?
It looks cute. The animatronics are really nice.
Yeah, it's a very old school dark ride. I really appreciate that it exists. And so I'm glad with the outcome that happened. Let's move on to some horror territory with Van Helsing. Have you ever seen Van Helsing with Kate Beckinsale and Hugh Jackman?
I'm not.
No, neither am I. Perfect. great discussion we're about. Sorry, go ahead. You were going to say something?
No, I was going to say, it's like, I don't know. I have other things to do. Yeah, I saw Challengers. Challengers is exactly as long as Van Helsing now that I look it up.
Really?
It's 2 hours and 11 minutes.
Is it as horny?
I hope Van Helsing is that horny.
Yeah. In the early aughts, Universal purchased a 10-year exclusive patent on the KUKA ride system. Disney had previously used the KUKA arm tech for an effect on its Nemo attraction in Epcot and had been planning to use it in an Incredibles-based attraction. They would also be able to be allowed to use the simple simulator tech for another Epcot ride, The Sum of All Thrills, in 2009, which I've never ridden. Universal first eyed the technology for a dark ride based on Van Helsing. Remember that? With Hugh Jackman? Kate Beckinsale? About monster hunting the Universal Classic Monsters? Well, Dorman, will you believe that it came out exactly 20 years to the day we are recording this podcast on May 7th, 2004?
We are recording this in the shadow of history.
20-year anniversary of Van Helsing coming out. I did not plan this, okay? Like, at all. Like, I was shocked when I was writing the show notes and looking up a Wikipedia page of Van Helsing. I'm like, when did it come out? May 7th. Oh, my God. It made a surprising lot of money, $300 million worldwide. Sadly, film cost $170 million to make. This is before the MCU. This is before movies all the time cost this much money. And it likely did not turn a profit. And it was also savaged by critics with 24% on Rotten Tomatoes. Very sad. But Universal, bless them, they tried. In 2004, a Van Helsing maze attraction opened up at Universal Studios Hollywood, which would subsequently close the following year. Not to be outdone, Florida planned the aforementioned dark ride to take place in a mini-land themed to the Universal Monsters just outside Lost Continent. And you can see the leaked blueprints right here. Guests would enter a castle and board seats on a robo-coaster from KUKA within a turntable. The attraction would then enter some short scenes, as this would have a much briefer ride time than Harry Potter, but be far, far more thrilling and wild. The attraction was slated for 2006, but nixed when Van Helsing didn't provide the results that Universal was hoping for. At the same time, they were courting J.K. Rowling, unfortunate, and reimagined the ride for the Harry Potter universe. That said, a monster-themed KUKA arm attraction eventually became a reality, with the rumor to be named Monsters Unchained, the Frankenstein Experiment, coming to Epic Universe at Dark Universe next year. It's even thought to retain the turntable loading dock from Van Helsing. So there's not much I can... the Monsters Unchained title? You don't like
What a shitty title. What a 2024, marketed to shit title.
Yeah.
Monsters Unchained, the Frankenstein Experiment. You have no fucking clue what that ride is about. Like, you're like, as if the name Frankenstein isn't enough to retain some people's attention. Hey, you want to go on Monsters Unchained, the Frankenstein Experiment? Dumbass. It's like, it is a name designed exclusively for search engine optimization and not communication. Because they just know that people are going to be like, let's go on the Frankenstein ride. Like, they know they're just going to say that. It's the same shit as like Tianu's Bio Adventure, where it's like, people are just going to say Splash Mountain. They're just going to say,
yeah.
No one's going to say that. You know, like, the only attraction to be built in recent years that has any good of a name is like Rise of the Resistance. That's a good name.
I think Web Slingers could be a good name if it didn't have the subtitle of Spider-Man Adventure,
because everything has to be a blank adventure.
Yeah,
a blank action.
Yeah. But Web Slingers is kind of blunt and to the point, which I kind
that's a good
like.
One. Yeah, like Astro Blasters, Web Slingers. Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's active. Sorry. I mean,
you're excited for Astro Blasters to become a Wreck-It Ralph ride?
I could give a shit. It's like, Tomorrowland, like, there was like one time ever where Tomorrowland had some kind of a unified theme, and even that had Astro Blasters. Like, I like the idea of Tomorrowland specifically in Walt Disney World being like, oh, it's this future community. That's cool. Mm-hmm. But all the other Tomorrowlands are just, this is the futuristic stuff. And like, Wreck-It Ralph may very well be futuristic. Who cares?
Yeah.
Like, I know it's based on 80s things, but not really. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like Mario's gonna jump through. Going inside the computer. Yeah, whatever. Screw it.
I love how we have so little to say about Van Helsing that we're just going on these random tangents.
Like, well, I think it makes sense that Universal would bank on the director of The Mummy to deliver a new kind of horror experience that would be perfect for an attraction.
Yeah.
That's unsurprising. The attraction itself, though, leaves little to,
the imagination.
Fuck, am I trying to say? Yeah, leaves little to bite into. And when you say like a robo coaster from Kukla, are you referring to something similar to Harry Potter and the Forbidden Journey?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Okay.
The thing is that they didn't like perfect, and they still haven't done it with the the robo coaster technology where it's actually on coaster track, and it's more referring to the actual like Kukla arm itself on the arm that will be able to move up and down. But like a robo coaster that goes up and down, like on a track that switches elevations, not so much yet. So yeah, this is pretty much like a really shorter version of the Forbidden Journey. Like
it's nice to see them experiment with all of that stuff. But I don't see the draw. The problem is that Van Helsing is just not that interesting.
Right.
It's just not that interesting of of a property.
Yeah, and neither of us have seen it. Like, and I have no interest in seeing it. Sometimes
maybe it's awesome, but I doubt it.
Yeah. Sometimes I doubt it. Sometimes when I do these topics, like I go, I want to see that. Let's check it out. Like I had zero like interest in even attempting to watch this garbage. And I hope that like Jalen isn't like some secret Van Helsing lover, and he's gonna be like, man, you're going after Van, my man Van.
And at some point you just have to accept that everyone is fans of something.
Yeah.
And it's like, everyone loves everything, and it's a little annoying. I prefer if everybody just changed to like what I like.
So just erase your head and that's it. Like,
I don't get the people who don't. Everyone who I'm, whatever. Moving on. If we just keep talking about Eraserhead, I won't stop. So.
Yeah. Okay.
They should have done that. A Kukla arm Eraserhead ride. Yeah. The universe needs to get on that. You know that part at the end of the movie where like the big baby head starts trying to bite at him and he blows up? Remember
that? So you're just,
I would
like,
go on a ride about that.
So you were just going to sit there, like, would your car be doing anything during the dinner scene?
No, when
the mom is like going hysterical and then the
chicken is bleeding.
Yeah.
No, that wouldn't make it in, of course. That couldn't make it in. You're crazy. This would be just a fast roller coaster with scary images. That's all it would be.
Jesus. It's a nightmare ride. Okay. Speaking of nightmare rides, the next one is Stephen King. One idea of pitch for a dark ride at Universal Studios Florida was to be based on the works of Stephen King. This roller coaster would depart from a hamlet in Maine, of course, and then twist into the psychotic mind of King's stories, filled with imagery from stories like Christine, Carrie, Cujo, and other ones that don't start with the letter C. The twist of the ride you may recognize, guests would pull up to the exit station and be told to wait for their lap bars to release. Suddenly, the door we assume is an exit unfolds like an elevator and waves of blood from the shining spill out. In the ride, console is revealed to be Pennywise, who sends you barreling through the rest of the attraction. While this attraction was shelved, likely due to not being able to gather the rights, the twist idea was reused infamously in Revenge of the Mummy. Pretty brief ideas, but what do you think? I don't know how familiar you are besides The Shining with the works of Stephen King. I know a bunch of fans, and yeah, I've seen a few.
I'm reading his memoir, which is I've read a couple.
Did you get to the car accident yet?
No, not yet, actually.
Okay.
I'm at the point where he's writing Carrie.
So all right. Still a little earlier
than. Anyways, the it's a really interesting idea. I distinctly remember, and maybe you can fill me in on this, I don't remember if the bit is really sold on Revenge of the Mummy like that strongly. Do the lights come up and it looks like you're in like a getting out area, or are you just like paused on the attraction?
So you're I don't think it's 100% sold, because the lights, you're right, the lights don't fully come up, and it's like this It's like this projection of a cheery woman in there, and she goes, "Please wait for your mom to release." And then it goes like this, like a flashing strobe light comes up, and it's revealed to be Imhotep. So no, it's not 100%. I do think the idea of a door being there, and you think this is the exit, and that's what you're looking at, you know, is a better way to communicate it. And now, probably, I'd have to guess that the waves of blood, that would have to be a screen, because you can't just have gushing red dyed water constantly spilling out every like 30 seconds.
Why not?
Because how would you be able to reset that easily? Every 30 seconds?
Not much?
Exactly. It would have to be a screen, which could just kind of eliminate it. Maybe if the door, you see the door, but it like transforms kind of like the Tower of Terror and kind of a projection mapping effect into the elevator that spills out. That would be cool. This was pretty much supposed to be kind of the answer to the Tower of Terror itself. Mm-hmm. So I could see what they were going for.
Right. Mm-hmm. But instead of Rod Serling, you pull
Stephen King.
Stephen King, exactly. Yeah, right. That makes sense. But mm-hmm. I mean, I like the idea. I like the idea that there's a twist in the attraction.
Which clearly they love. They love that idea and they used it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But there's not much else known about it. I think the weakness of the attraction and the reason why Tower of Terror works so well is because it's not just an amalgamation of all Twilight Zone ideas. There is a central concept that is at the heart of it. Mm-hmm. And this one doesn't, it seems to lack it. And it seems to be this just kind of general odd soup of sorts.
You're right. The Twilight Zone Tower of Terror has references to parts of the Twilight Zone series, but it's not. There's a central premise. There's a conceit. Mm-hmm. You're in an episode of the Twilight Zone, and this is very different. This is like a best of collection, almost like a Hotel Mel kind of would have had some
kind of idea.
Yeah,
which was also a bit messy as well.
Yes.
Yeah. So the next one. Let's start out with a little poem. Zeus landing at Islands of Adventure is delightfully absurd, yet there was to be one attraction not seen, but heard. Disney may have a racetrack, campground, and aquarium. Universal would have been only one with a noisarium. Huh? The noisarium? Yeah. One attraction proposed for Zeus Landing was the noisarium, a playground devoted to soundscapes. Per Kona, the design firm, Universal set out a simple challenge. Design an experience about Dr. Seuss and noise. Noisarium was to be a landing pad for the Cat in the Hat ride at Seuss Landing at the Islands of Adventure theme park. After emerging from a forest of Seussian palms, the focal event was an interactive orchestra set in a village square, inviting visitors to join into a jam session. And you can see not only the concept art, but kind of the map of this entire area. Nice little walkthrough attraction. And my favorite thing is that last piece of concept art. That's just a bunch of giant instruments making noise. It's see like the wind being blown out of them. Surrounding this square, a series of mysterious rooms invited visitors to explore a warren of wacky interactive sound chambers. Whether or not the talking closet, the bubble room. A&A invited a wide range of talent to join this team, from an art director / composer of public television to Hollywood special effects experts. And there's more, showing that weather room, which is like you could see screens where levers control the weather. And I believe this is the talking closet. And could you kind of like get an idea of what this is?
Maybe like you hit like books and make noises and stuff like that. Or
that's possibly it. Yeah. And then there's the bubble room, which is of course just a bunch of bubbles emerging from the floor. Sadly, Gene Mackle's sound design never made it, as it was cut from the lineup and replaced with nothing, as it was to be next to Cat in the Hat. The whole idea was to basically recreate the noise scene from The Grinch, with wham bangers and hole whoppers, smang dangling and con noodling a cacophonous mess. In other words, parents and team members would be miserable. Also cut from Seuss Landing was Mr. Monkey McBean's unusual flying machines, which is a combination Autopia and People Mover taking place above the sky. However, the ride system never quite made it out of the testing phase and eventually opened up later on, I believe in 2006. Or 2007, as High in the Sky Seuss Trolley Ride years later, a normal elevated monorail attraction. So the Noisarium, what does this remind you of? Because it reminds me of something we talked about in the past.
Oh, well, for me, the first thought I have is that it reminds me of ImageWorks and Inventions. Like, all essentially, right. It just looks like it's this answer to ImageWorks and Inventions. What does it remind you of?
Unfortunately, it reminds me of that shitty Dreamversion park we talked about.
Oh.
Which may have just ripped some of this off, because you have this giant, like, it's giant instruments like that kids can play with.
Right.
And I agree with you, like, a lot of these are very creative and cool ideas, but man, all this noise, you know, and kids just banging on it. This would have to be hell, wouldn't it?
Yeah, working in there would be kind of like hell, but I think that it would be that you would have like a central song and everything would kind of add to it. Kind of like they do at the Pandora thing, where you're not actually making any music. You're just turning on and off like an MP3 line of like, oh, I'm now going to, when you wave your hands at a Figments thing, it doesn't really, you're not really making sound generally. Well,
you're I mean, doing sometimes one you are. Spark, yeah.
Yeah, you're just raising and lowering the pitch of like some instrument playing the same song. Mm-hmm. I think it would just be loud and obnoxious. So if you had like a migraine headache, but for what it's worth, I think a lot of Seuss Landing is loud and obnoxious if you have a migraine headache.
But that's the thing about this, is that I think they were going for cacophony here because that's closer to the Seuss spirit. And yes. I think the idea is that you would go into these little rooms on the side to maybe get like a breather of sorts.
I think organized chaos is maybe the best way to think about it.
Yeah. Is it weird that this walkthrough attraction is probably the best one we've talked about so far?
I mean, I think it's just incredibly creative. Far and away, the most interesting one. And obviously, like with Dr. Seuss, you have very few limitations. You just get to do whatever. And it's like, well, then the mechanics of the attraction really speak. But yeah, you're right. This is far and away the best.
Yeah, and it's... I like the weather room. The weather room's really cool.
It's
like
neat.
Yeah.
But you like turn on different weather to make different music.
Yeah. And so there's like kind of like a steering wheel, like a ship steering wheel. And that clearly like controls the waves. And then you have a little like steam whistle that probably controls like the wind and little levers. It's really, really well thought out and creative. The Mr. Monkey McBean's Unusual Flying Machines is funny because even though they did make it, the whole idea was that this was going to be like an elevated Autopia, but they could never make this work to where you can stop and start this thing. And it would have been a nightmare. I mean, Autopia is hard enough and that's on the ground. This is on a raised platform. And children would be driving these things. I don't think it was a good idea at all. Like, not even close.
No, I would agree with that.
It's probably best that they did it like that. Yeah. Let's end this special with Apollo 13. This one's we saved the oddest for last, a coaster attraction based on Tom Hanks's and Ron Howard's Apollo 13, which was based on a real life near disaster. Per Theme Park Insider, inspired by the 1995 Tom Hanks movie, Universal's Apollo 13 would have been an indoor roller coaster housed in a scaled recreation of the Kennedy Space Center's Vehicle Assembly Building. Universal wanted to add a thrill ride to Universal Studios Florida to balance the three world-class coasters it was commissioning for Islands of Adventure. Riders on Apollo 13 would have boarded Apollo-style capsules by walking across a gangplank and crawling into their ride vehicle, before blasting off on a coaster ride around the moon and back. in an industry where somebody, it's something that always goes terribly wrong, the Apollo 13 mission provides one of real life's best ever examples of how people can recover from something goes terribly wrong and survive. So I guess it's not like the Titanic where people actually died, but it is still something that actually happened to real people. Images of a gantry gangplank blueprint surfaced at heritage auctions for the proposed attraction recently, proving they were looking to design it. Apollo 13 was a massive hit, one indeed had a making of attraction in Hollywood with that gangplank section. This could have been the inspiration for a bonkers roller coaster, but sadly, all we have to wonder is, what if?
And what's a gangplank gantry? What do you mean by that?
So, okay, have you ever watched people go onto a space shuttle?
Oh, okay, I know what you. Okay, yeah.
They go up the elevator, the gantry lift, and right. they get off, and then they have to go across this gangplank bridge to get onto the shuttle itself.
Right. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
I don't know if you would. It's not quite in poor taste. Maybe, kind of, sort of. Everyone lived, so it's not that bad of a problem.
It is odd. Like, it's a roller coaster and it's not a simulator, you know?
It's very weird.
Yeah.
It speaks to a very different time when Universal was more interested. Maybe they were more limited, but also mm-hmm. that there was like a real draw to show excellent movies made by this company. Mm-hmm.
They made excellent movies.
Yeah, right. You didn't like Migration? You weren't a big fan of Migration?
Not so much, no.
They were giving away the $35 sippy cups at AMC. When I was at their last,
it was one of the birds on them.
Yeah, yeah, no, they were giving away all of the birds and all of the cups, and it was like just take them
for free,
for free. Yeah. They were sitting in front of the theater, and it was like you can have as many of the little figures and cups as you want.
These because the movie was such a piece of shit. Numbers, yeah.
No, because I remember the trailers. They had no faith in that movie. That movie sucked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I didn't see it, so I gotta imagine it sucked. Maybe it's like the best movie they ever made.
It was very mediocre.
You saw it?
Yeah, I actually saw it.
Why?
I just saw it. I just watched it. That's all.
You could have learned to knit.
That's the end. You're right. That it's a better use of my time. People said, "Oh, this is the best elimination movie," and I was like, "Who said that?
Like a 7-year-old?"
There's going to be people, I know people who said that, who listen to this podcast. You're about to be in trouble, sir.
But they're probably like, they're probably, never mind. I'm going to say something.
Also 7 years old.
I bet they're nice people. They're nice people. It's just if you watch children's cartoons, did they also say the new Bluey was really good? I was like, it was really complicated. It was like,
when he tore out the sign.
I was,
you know, that was on was the kinda, edge of my seat.
I was a little cringing. I was like, this song is like really lame. Really, if I was like a kid and I was watching that, I'd be like, what the fuck is happening?
It made parents cry, you cynical motherfucker.
I like that the parents can watch it. I was watching Blue. I don't know how we got to talk to Bluey. Yeah. But I like that the parents were, if I was watching it and I was like, you know what? If I had a child and I was like bored, I would watch Bluey with them. Sure, Bluey's
it's so much better than the other crap the parents have to watch.
Yeah, then, yeah. You know, Migration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that Apollo 13 is an interesting idea for a roller coaster. I don't know how you pitch to your friends, hey, after we get off the Hulk, you want to get on that Apollo 13 roller coaster?
Well,
what's
I think
that? It's that Ron Howard feel good movie of the year where the three astronauts save the day and land the spaceship back.
It's just an odd idea.
That was a really bad summary of Apollo. Yeah,
it's an odd idea. Like, where you're in an enclosed roller coaster. Why? What's the point? And then years later, they come up with Mission Space, which is like, well, that's a better way of doing it. And that still sucks. Like, that's the way I think about it.
Well, can you can you think of another time in any kind of theme park? Probably Dubai would be the only place where this might have happened. But can you think of another time in any theme park where the basis of the attraction has been like a very serious film, like a very serious drama on the exciting thrill ride? Like, not the Great Movie Ride, because that had serious movies, but I mean like a serious drama turned thrill ride. Has that ever happened before?
Oh, that's a good point. I mean, there are Hunger Game rides out there.
Right, but that was like a, that was like a,
you're talking,
movie,
you're, you know, talking about like an Oscar bait serious, yes, drama film.
Yes. And yeah, Apollo 13, okay, I think is a good movie, but like, I wouldn't make a boat ride out of fucking Castaway.
I mean, okay, so I see what you're saying. You are correct. I don't think anybody's going to be making the Oppenheimer thrill ride. So
now hold on.
Yes, I know you really want it. it's too bad they don't make special effects, you know, attractions anymore. That would be God, a cool one.
They drop a real nuke in front of.
They would show. It's like, this is how Christopher Nolan made the atomic bomb in real life. You're right. There's really not much like that, and that's probably why it's not a great idea. But this was the 90s, where, you know, even our Oscar films also had to be bombastic.
The closest thing I can think of is E.T. And like, E.T. is like still a kid's movie, but mm-hmm, it's like a, yeah, Spielberg kid's movie, right? So there's
very Amblin-y, you know.
Right. And we look back at E.T. as like a great film beyond, mm-hmm, being just like an exciting movie. But even then, yeah, like, it's like, or I guess Jaws.
E.T. There was a time nominated where I guess, for Best Picture, right? Yeah, but okay. Jaws was a summer blockbuster. It was the first, absolutely, summer blockbuster.
Absolutely. It goes to show that there's a real difference in our, like, what people call good, or what movies are good and what movies are, mm-hmm, popular.
Yeah,
like Apollo 13 was both incredibly popular and, mm-hmm, Oscar bait. I don't know if I, anyways, Oscar bait. And E.T. and Jaws similarly, like, very good and very, mm-hmm, popular. Nowadays, right, that line is very separate, and we don't really see that anymore. Like, they're not, you know, even Mission Impossible hasn't really gotten any kind of attraction, or John Wick or things like that.
We did talk. That's interesting.
We did
Mission Impossible. We talked about it. John Wick is getting an attraction in Las Vegas here at Area 15, and not like a ride, but like kind of like a immersive VR something attraction. So I mean, at least that's
stressful as shit.
Yes,
get caught in the middle of a gunfight.
Lions. I swear, Lionsgate tries all this shit. They were going to open up like this park in Times Square that we never got around to talking about it. Just crazy stuff. Lionsgate is out of their fucking minds. But yeah, it's just weird. This one is just so weird. I can't picture it. Like, what you're talking about? Like, it's a coaster, but you're enclosed in a capsule. Why the fuck would you do that? Why isn't this a simulator? It just doesn't make any sense to me. And no wonder it wasn't built, because it's stupid. It's stupid.
It's really dumb.
Yeah, that's pretty much all I have to say about that.
The simulator would have also, I think, been a bit silly, to be clear. But I also,
mm-hmm, yeah,
maybe it would have been less silly.
Okay, so let's take all the attractions that we had and talk about Build It or Not. I will let you go first. What of these attractions do you want to see built?
I think the Noisarium is the obvious first pick. I would have liked to have seen it. Heaven forbid I have to work on it, but I'd like to see it. And besides that, I don't have any other build its.
Okay.
Although I will go on a limb and say that I would be very interested to see the James Bond stunt show. And while I don't think that it would have a very long lifespan, or at least its lifespan would come into question after the entire series is rebooted and reformed into a more, I guess, highbrow movies, quote unquote, or like, you know, espionage versus technology, you know, leaving the Cold War and the space race and stuff like that. But I do think that the Noisarium and the Bond stunt show are the two that I think have the best legs out of everything here.
I think this is the first time we've been doing this podcast for about 3 years now, and this is the first time ever I get to say, you have completely taken every single word out of my mouth. I 100% agree with everything you just said. Like, there was not a single thing I disagreed with where you said.
Nice.
There.
Well, look, like, that's yeah, we're becoming real friends.
Yeah. I know. Like, I was like, wow, this is actually kind of eerie how dead on you are right now.
I mean, yeah. I think there's like, to add a couple of things, I think that the Stephen King ride would have been neat, but the best part was pivoted into Revenge of the Mummy, and I think, mm-hmm, is a bit more, the premise of Revenge of the Mummy is cooler, that you're going into a film set, and that, like, versus the Stephen King hodgepodge of things. And, mm-hmm, then, I don't know, the Harry Potter ride would have made me vomit, but maybe it would have been a cool idea. But I don't think any of the other ones probably should have been built. The idea was later better used or just sucked, unfortunately. Mm-hmm.
True. Well, that goes it for our Universal cancellation special. It's Universal was ride the movies. It is now the start of the summer movie season. So go out and support your local movie theater by seeing movies that nobody else is seeing, like The Fall Guy. Or you can see an art house movie that Ryan Dorman would rather you see, like Monkey Man. Do you want people to see Monkey
That's
Man
not
or
art house?
I'm kidding. No. What movies do you recommend people see?
Oh, if you want to go see movies at this summer, the first movie primarily you should go see is I Saw the TV Glow.
I'm going to the World's Fair one, right?
Yeah, we're all going to the World's Fair. They did that. I'm going to go see that up in Boston, make the trek to go see the live Q&A because I'm, I really want to go see it early. That looks really good. Alternatively, I don't know what else. I hear Hitman is actually okay, and that's coming out later this year. Challengers is great. It's like you can play me out with like music right now. Challengers is great. Hundreds of Beavers is getting the wide expansion.
I saw Hundreds of Beavers. And
I haven't yet, actually.
That's the thing. I opted for streaming because the showings all did not, happen with my, awful schedule. So I was very, very sad about that. But I did watch it on digital and it was fantastic. I loved it. With The People's Joker. I want to see that.
I thought it was very good. I think it's going to be divisive, even in amongst normal people. It's a trans coming of age story just through and through. So I think obviously, that'll be, I don't know if anyone not on the internet will see it, but even people on the internet might be a bit divided on it, but I really liked it. I thought it was really, really funny. And
I hope it comes out on digital soon so I can watch it.
Yeah. Vera Drew said that it's coming to streaming by the end of the year. It might hit Canopy. So if you have a library card, I think it might get up on there.
That's interesting.
And then there'll be a Blu-ray and a VHS release. So that'll come out.
A VHS release. That's awesome.
Yeah, because the primary vehicle for the movie was that Vera Drew, when she was younger, saw the scene with Nicole Kidman in who the fuck is in Batman Forever? Is that George Clooney?
That is Val Kilmer.
Val Kilmer.
Val Kilmer.
That's right.
Yeah, Val Kilmer.
Yeah, so Val Kilmer and George Clooney. Val Kilmer and Nicole Kidman. And was really phased by Nicole Kidman. And that was a big identity forming moment. So I guess VHS is the natural place for that to end up.
Yeah.
And then Megalopolis will come out this year, maybe in France.
I saw the clip of it. It doesn't look like I thought it would. But
it looks like episode one, so that's exciting.
Which is also out in theaters if you're a weirdo who thinks the prequels are cinema. You can also
And then and unfortunately, I don't know why I didn't say this. I don't know why we haven't brought this up, but Barry Jenkins. Did you see Barry Jenkins's tweets about the Mufasa prequel? I respect the shit out of him for not only getting the bag, but also either lying through his teeth or being a bonehead about the Lion King prequel. Because people were like, "This looks bad and soulless," and that sucks to hear about your movie.
Yeah,
you don't want to hear that.
This is embedded in our mythology.
It's complete cognitive dissonance. It's like someone comes up to you and says, "That old Lion King was great, but that prequel sucked." And then Barry Jenkins is like, "You're an idiot. The old one was great." And it's like, no one was talking about that. No one was even coming to you about the 1990s Lion King. But I respect him wholeheartedly for becoming completely in the bag that he believes that the bag is.
I mean, if he just wants to make Moonlight 2, Electric Boogaloo, so let him make the money.
Underground Railroad is great on Amazon Prime. I think it's still up on there. I hope they didn't take it down because it was a Prime exclusive. But Underground Railroad is great. It's on the Criterion Collection now. And then If Beale Street Could Talk is great. So Barry Jenkins is kind of great if not for this one little thing. But you got to make the bag. You got to make Dune. Mm-hmm. You got to make your Dune.
You got to make your
Dune. You got to make your Barbie. Mm-hmm. Hot take. But I saw the TV Glow. Go see that. That'll get its own ride one day, Universal, I'm sure.
Oh, I can't wait for that personally.
Yeah. the first A24 ride. A24 needs to break into the theme park
with,
space.
With A24, with Civil War happening.
Jesus.
It seems to be the inevitability that we're going to have an A24 theme park.
Like in Seattle or something?
Maybe. I don't know.
It's like the most, you know, hipster place on the entire world.
Yeah. but in the meantime, please follow us on social media on Twitter at UnbuiltPod. You can reach me at OpenMothersMail, Ryan Dorman at OpenTheDorman. Feel free to email us at UnbuiltPod@gmail.com and rate us wherever you find this podcast. Please write a review and tell us how we're doing. And if you don't like us, thank you for listening to Discover Universal. I'm David. See you guys.
See ya.